1 Timothy chapter 6. Now, we're only going through two short verses this morning, but this issue is huge. In John chapter 5, in verse 17, Jesus made a remark that almost got him killed early. He says, "My Father is at his work to this very day." You might remember when Jesus said that, they wanted to kill him. And in that statement, it was a loaded statement. He explains many things about God the Father. When he says, "My Father is always at his work to this very day," he is referring to God and indicating that God the Father is a worker. And Jesus knows God better than anybody. And if he knows God better than anybody and he knows that he's a worker, then we can understand and accept the fact that God, in his very character, by his very nature, is one who works, which is no surprise, because if you read the Bible from the beginning, you're not going to get five words into the Bible and you're going to find out that God is a worker. You know the verse, "In the beginning, God created." We know that he's a worker. He's creating. He's productive. He's producing. So here you've got God posturing himself from the very beginning as a worker, and then he becomes a man and comes into this life and acknowledges the fact that he's a worker. Jesus saying, "My Father is working to this very day, and so I'm going to work as well." And so God is a worker. We see that from the very first chapter in the Bible. God uses the rest of Genesis chapter 1 to set several precedents for work and the nature of it. Because in Genesis chapter 1, it says God created, God worked, he made the heavens and the earth. And then the rest of the chapter goes on to explain how he made them and certain things surrounding the creation event. And so if you read that first chapter, you can learn a lot of principles about the nature of work as God intends it to be. One of them is this. I'll give you three. One is that work is others-centered. Work is to be, ideally, others-centered. And here's how I come to that conclusion after reading Genesis chapter 1. You start reading it and you follow that there's this kind of a pattern. You can turn to Genesis chapter 1 if you'd like and read it for yourself, but it says that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and the Spirit was hovering over the face of the deep, and so God separated light from darkness. On the first day he separated light from darkness and created illumination. And then on the second day, he goes on from there, and he continues the creative work. By the third day, he's creating plants. On the fourth day, he's putting the solar system in order. By the fifth day, he's creating birds and fish and all the stuff that fills the seas and the air. And then on the sixth day, he makes beasts, everything that you would see in a zoo. And then he, in the pinnacle of his creative effort, he creates a man. And so you see this consistency in his work week, where it's others-centered. And by that, here's how I come to that conclusion. By the time you get to like day 3 or 4 or 5, you know that there's more coming. Okay? So like you get to day 3 and God's made plants. He's made dirt and water. He's made an atmosphere because plants need, you know, carbon dioxide and stuff like that. So he's created all of the elements and then plants and all of these visuals creating illumination. So it's all of this display of observable creation, complete with colors and all the rest, and yet he hasn't yet made eyes. Up until day 3, there weren't such thing as eyes. Not in animals, let alone human beings who have the ability to appreciate beauty. And then he creates on day 3, coffee. Thank you. Listen, here's some more. Oranges? Good ones, not from Walmart. Good oranges that taste awesome. You know, like he creates taste. But we're that far into the creative work week and we know that there's more coming because he's created taste and yet no taste buds. There's no such thing as something to enjoy the flavors that he's created inherent in an orange. And so even by the time you get to day 5, you go, there's got to be more to this. And then in the crowning, the crowning achievement of his whole creative effort, he creates a human being with eyes to see, taste buds to taste, ears to hear the sound of the rushing waters that he created way back on day 2, all of the things that he had been creating culminated in the creation of somebody to enjoy all of his creative efforts up until that point. So I can say that work was meant to be others-centered, because it's very clear that when God was creating on day one, day two, day three, day four, day five, that he wasn't creating for himself alone. He was creating in his service to Adam, who would eventually come into this work environment and enjoy all of the preliminary work that God had put forth. Does that make sense? All of God's work on day one, two, three, four, five was for someone else's enjoyment, not his alone. So work for you and I is not meant to be for your enjoyment alone. That's a huge principle that if you would absorb that by itself, may or may not revolutionize the way you approach the way that you approach your job. Okay? There's another thing here, number two. Looking at God's creative work in Genesis chapter 1, we also know that work is demanding. We know that work is going to cost. It's going to require. It required of God 6 full days out of 7. And I think you and I know enough about God to know that he could have done it in 3 days. Everything that he did in 6 days, he could have done in maybe a day or a few hours. Is that not true? God could have just kind of said, let there be light and dirt and plants and animals and water and giraffes and everything else. But he didn't. Instead, he says, first, let there be light, and let the light be separate from the darkness. And then there was light and day, dark, and it was the first day. There was morning and there was evening. It took the whole day. God wasn't taking shortcuts. And after every creative day, it ends with, and there was then the second day, and it was the third day. He took his time. His work didn't involve shortcuts, like how can I get through this the quickest? Like how little of this do I actually have to do for it to be pretty decent? And so work is demanding. It's time intensive. It'll take up a lot of your life. Or it should, right? You should spend a lot of your life working. And for those of you that do, your 40 hours a week, that honors God. Your 40 hours a week honors God. If you're capable of working but you refuse to, if you are able to put forth creative effort, productivity, if you're able to serve and to work and labor, yet you don't want to and you're chronically unemployed, that doesn't honor God at all. God created us to work. It's to be time intensive. It's to take up a lot of your life. And some of us, we hate that. It's like, why God spend so much of my time working? Why do I got to work all the time? You know, 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week. Just so demanding. It's supposed to be that way. It was demanding for God. 6 out of his 7 days spent laboring. So work is to be others-centered. Work is to be demanding. And listen to this. Your work should be satisfying. If you read Genesis chapter 1, you find out that at the end of every day, God sat back, looked at the work he had accomplished, and declared it to be good. At the end of every day of his creation, he looked at what he had created and said, it's good. At the end of our work day, we should come home, put our feet up, so to speak, and say, that was a good day. What I have done with my waking hours was good and God-honoring. There's a satisfaction in that and a joy that's derived from our work. So those three principles, among others perhaps, we can learn from reading God's work. And I like that the Bible begins with God presenting himself as a worker. First chapter in the Bible, we see we're introduced to God and he's working. Now, let me say this. There's a principle here that your work won't satisfy unless it's others-centered and you allow it to demand something of you. If it's easy, I don't know if it counts as work. Okay? There are ways to make a real good living here in this city illegally, if you catch my drift. That's the easiest money you'll come by. selling something that's illegal, taking money from others, there's a way to get rich that skips work. It doesn't honor God. And satisfaction only comes if the first two principles are in play. Your work will derive satisfaction if it's others-centered rather than self-centered, and if it requires something of you, not looking to make shortcuts. So listen, human beings were created to spend much of their time serving others, working, and finding joy and satisfaction thereby. Guys, on God's last day of the work week, right? It's Friday for Him. He's been working hard making things like light and stars and Neptune. That's a hard job. You don't believe me? Then go do it. Okay? Terribly difficult. Of course, not for God. He just says some words and poof, Neptune. But for sake of argument here, He spends a full week exhausting Himself, perhaps, in creative effort. By the time He gets to day six, He's still got a day left of work. So it's His Friday, but He ain't checking out. You know what I mean? Like some people, they check out on Friday. God pushes through to the very end, and on day six, on His Friday, He creates Adam, the first man. And Adam is the human prototype for all of us. Did you know that God made Adam and Eve in God's own image, and that you and I, in line with that prototype, have been made in the image of God? If Adam was made in God's image, and God is a worker, then that means Adam was created as a worker, meant to work. And if he was only the prototype, then that means that you and I, being created in God's image, are created for work. Workers who are built to be other-centered, workers who are built to invest in those efforts, workers that are built by God in His image to derive satisfaction and joy from the work we accomplish. The tragedy is that, statistically, we're not there. In 2013, there was a Gallup poll conducted that says that 70% of Americans are not finding joy in their occupation. That was in 2013. What's interesting is that the U.S. News and World Report published some data that they found in 1987, almost 30 years before, and guess what percentage of Americans hated their jobs back then? 70%. It's like nothing changes. About three-quarters of everybody hates their job. 7 out of 10 people can't stand it. They hate work. And I would even say that the 30%, the 3 out of 10 that are finding, quote, they do like their job, don't like it completely. I mean, there's probably something that they would change. Like maybe their boss could use a little bit more of this, or maybe, you know, if I didn't have to work on Saturdays, I'd change that. So I don't think anybody's fully happy with their job. And yet as Christians, we have been made in the image of God to find full satisfaction in what we do. So the question is, what went wrong? Why is it that the majority of us just don't like what we do? Well, you can go on reading in Genesis and you find out that Adam was given by God in Genesis 2:15 a job to tend the Garden of Eden. Genesis 2:15, it says that God put him in the garden to tend and to keep it, to work in the garden. Now that's in chapter 2. That's before we get to Genesis chapter 3. And those of you not know, Genesis chapter 3 brings about a very strong shift in the human perspective on life with the introduction of sin. But in Genesis 2, it was still perfect. God commissioned Adam to be a gardener. First of all, it was like the best job in the world, because him being the only human being, he had the only job that was assigned to a human being. It was literally the best job in the world. It was the perfect job. Okay, it existed before sin, so there's nothing wrong with it at all. It's not like you had a bad boss. Who's your boss? God. Like, he's a pretty good boss, right? There's no such thing as sin. Everything would have gone his way. He had the perfect job. You get to Genesis chapter 3, him and his wife disobey the boss, and then he gets fired. He was given the job of caretaking the garden, but by the end of chapter 3, they're kicked out of the garden. Fired. And in Genesis chapter 3, we read something interesting that plays into our lives. In Genesis chapter 3, verse 17, I'll read this. To Adam, God said, because you've listened to the voice of your wife and you have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying you should not eat it, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you will eat bread until you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, dust you are, and to dust you shall return. So why do 7 out of 10 Americans hate their job? Because of sin. Because sin ruins the others-centered approach that we should have at our jobs, the investment we should be making in our jobs, the satisfaction we derive from our jobs, and really the amount to which we see God involved in our jobs. No wonder we hate going to work. Who else would want to? Well, modern day thorns and thistles, when God promises that there will be a curse for Adam, that in all of his work there will be such thing as thorns and thistles, ours might not be in the agricultural realm, but we all face thorns and thistles at work. Sometimes it's just having to earn a living in a kind of a crass environment. Like if you're a Christian, you got a sensitive conscience, and now you got a job where everybody's telling dirty jokes, and you hate that, and you wish you could find another job. Some of you, it's just going to be the exposure that you have to the corruption of the business world. You're going to see stuff happening in your job environment that you don't like. Some of you, it's just going to be like really difficult coworkers or really difficult bosses. There's going to be relational conflict that happens at your church that you wish you could avoid or change. And listen, that's precisely what was going on in the church at Ephesus, and that's why Paul is writing this letter, because between employer and employee, Paul was finding out that there was a little bit of tension happening there. And so Paul writes to Timothy these two verses, and this is today's text, in 1 Timothy chapter 6. He says in verse 1, let as many bondservants as are under the yoke, which means employees, count their own masters, which means employers, worthy of all honor, so that the name of God and his doctrine may not be blasphemed. Paul recognizes that there's tension in the workplace. And those who have believing masters, let them not despise them because they're brethren or other Christians, but rather serve them because those who are benefited are believers and beloved. Teach and exhort these things. This is important for us to teach and exhort these things. Paul tells Pastor Timothy to teach and exhort these things. I think it's good for us to really focus on the issue of work right now. And so for this week and then for next week, we'll be dealing with the issue of work also. On Wednesdays, coming Wednesday this week and coming Wednesday next week, we'll be watching videos concerning our job in the workplace so that we can get a bit of a handle on this. I think it's an often neglected sort of thing in Christianity where we start to believe that church happens here, that we worship God at church, and that God can use me here, well, as long as I'm part of this, but when it's time Monday morning, I go to work, and then it's kind of just I go there and I do my job, and that's about it. Now, one thing I want you guys to notice in this section, verses 1 and 2, is that Paul recognizes that there's some tension happening in the workplace between employers and employees. And he's not apologizing. God's not apologizing for placing his beloved children in occupational positions where there's tension and hardship. Okay? Instead, he's instructing them in it. So some of you as Christians, I run into Christians every once in a while where their job is hard, and they throw up their hands and go, well, God doesn't want this for me. He wants me to be happy all the time at work, and he wants me to have a Christian boss and Christian coworkers, so I should probably find another job. And God's like, no, I don't want you to run from it. I put you in this job so that you could learn something. Much of your character will be refined at work. I mean, God's got you for 8 hours a day. You think he's just going to waste his time? Oh, they're at work. I can't do anything. Can't wait till they clock out so I can get back to training them and building them as Christians and really doing some work in their life. But right now they're on ghoul, you know, like they're hiding. Can't do nothing. God's hands aren't tied. And your life, probably second to the amount of time you spend at home, will be most often spent at your job, just by the sheer number of hours that you are there. And so God intends to work in you and on you in that place. Now, if 70% of their people hate their job, I wonder why that is. First, I don't think it's because their job is so hard. I mean, you could have the easiest job in the world and complain about it. I hate this job. Some people, their job is too easy, and that's why they complain. They want to be challenged more. They want something a little more robust for their character development, a little more challenging for them, but that's not always the case. Well, if it's not because the work is hard, then why is there so little joy in it? I think oftentimes it's because we see our job as meaningless. Have you ever gone to your job and gone, why do I have to do this? Why do I have to spend so much of my life working? You ever been there? I mean, if you think about it, it's like, I'm spending 8 hours a day when I could definitely think of something better to be doing with my time. If you've got a family, if you've got relationships, you've got other interests, you just think, I'm just going to work all my life. I'm just going to keep doing this, and then I'm going to eventually die. And by the time I die, I'm going to be so old that I don't really get to do anything that I would have done with my time when I was young. And so now I'm just wasting my life with this career. Well, if you think that your job is meaningless, maybe it's because God seems to be absent. If God is there with you in your place of employment, well then, there is no greater significance to your time spent than for God to be working in you and through you. And if He's planning on doing that at your job, then your job, my friends, is not meaningless. He has that desire. Christians, true Christians, find some of their greatest joy in being used by God. And I know that those of you in this room who have felt God use you in the life of somebody else, there's no greater joy. I mean, it's like it's a rush. It's a real high. A real God-ordained emotional spike. So if God uses you at your job, you'll find joy there. If there's no joy, then the question is God using you there? God has given to the church, in Ephesians 4, for the equipping of the saints for the work of ministry. Now let me say this to you guys. The work of the ministry happens not only here in this church, but elsewhere. We need to see a difference between church work and secular work. There really is no difference. You're serving the Lord wherever you go. If you're a child of God, He plans to use you no matter whether you're in this building or in a factory. In Genesis 2:15, it says that the Lord God took the man Adam and He put him in the Garden of Eden to work and keep it. The word work there is the same Hebrew verb that you'll find in Exodus 3:12, but in Exodus 3:12, it's not translated as work, it's translated as worship. In Exodus, He says, "This is the sign that I am the one who has sent you." He says to Moses, "When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain." It's the same word that He used for working in Genesis chapter 2. Work and worship are synonymous in the Bible. In fact, that word adova, whatever the Hebrew word is, it's used throughout the Old Testament to describe work, worship, service, cultivation, all of those things that suggest an integration between your labor and your glorifying of God. That's why Paul in Colossians 3 says, "Work willingly at whatever you do as though you were working for the Lord." Not just when you serve at church, but in whatever you do, in your home, at your occupation, wherever you are, whatever you do, you work as if God was your employer. Christians don't go to their job to work. Christians go to their job to worship. Sometimes we get confused. What do you go to church for? I go to church to worship. Why do you go to your job? I go there to work. Doesn't need to be that way. You start to look at church as the place you worship and your job as the place you work, you're dividing the two. And we can take our worship into our work. Some of us, we get really discouraged at our jobs because we feel like we're not really in a place where God can use us. Those of you that have gone on missions trips, some of you just returning, there's oftentimes a letdown, isn't there? I mean, you're over there and you're serving God and it's full time and you're like, oh, he's doing something. You feel like you're making a difference. And then you come home and it's like, oh, now I go back to work. And God's like, don't do that. Don't start to see what goes on in the church as most important. Because much of the work of God happens outside of the church. God has you. Listen, if God's greatest work happened in the church and God was going to use you to your fullest, then everybody would be a pastor. You'd all be youth leaders, or you'd all be, you know, like full-time employees of this church, but it's not that way. God has like a few at best. Right now, he's got none. I'm part-time. Mike's still out in the workforce. Everybody else around here is still out there working. Why? Because God wants the ministry of this church to be happening out there. So you students, where's your mission field? It's not the Philippines. If it was, he would have taken you. But it's not. It's UWS. It's the hospital. It's Compudyne. Everywhere he's got you is where your mission field is. Who would have known that the carpentry field or boat tours, you know, or whatever it is that you do, group home care. I mean, you know, we got a vast array of representatives in here, and God goes, you're my ambassadors that I've commissioned to serve me in the mission field of your particular place of work. And so he sends you out, and if you start to see the work that you do as significantly available to God to use through you, then it changes your perspective on everything. And I remember when I worked for many years as a butcher, miserable, thinking that, well, just cut meat? Like, what is this? So much of my life is spent cutting meat. Until I got saved and I started to realize that God had me there for a reason. So now my reason isn't to cut meat and get money. My reason primarily for being there is the souls of my coworkers and my employer. And so it changed everything. I cut meat better. I worked harder. I was a better example. I would get my boss coffee. Like, weird. Like, all of a sudden I'm starting to like do stuff to serve people. And lo and behold, that changed everything even about my work. They started to promote me, make me manager. I started to work I wasn't trying to do that. I was just trying to be a better employer. I wanted to serve God. I wanted to honor him in the work that I was doing and see if he would use me in the lives of others. And he did. And he started to, it changes your perspective on your job. Listen, if you're one of the 70% that just hates going to work, it doesn't need to be that way. It doesn't need to be the right way. In fact, God can infuse your life with some of the greatest joy you've ever experienced at your job, if you'll let him. But the question is with what perspective do you see your job? Is it a self-centered perspective? Are you there to get a paycheck and climb the ladder and get benefits and do better than everybody else and, you know, dog eat dog world? Or are you there regardless of the pay you receive, regardless of the benefits, regardless of the insurance, regardless of any of the accolades you're there to serve. And the clients I deal with, the coworkers I involve myself with, the boss I serve under, my job is to serve them and make their life easier. You saw the comedian, right? His whole world shifted when he realized, you know what, I'm not here to get laughter from people. I'm here to give them a chance to laugh. He said that changed his whole career. It changed everything in me when I realized I wasn't there to get a paycheck. I was there to cut as much meat as I could to make my boss's life easier. As much work as I could get done, I would get done. I ended up being one of the fastest meat cutters there. I earned the nickname Speedy, which I guess flattering, but God is honored when we set our minds to becoming good employees, not for the sake of what we'll get from it, but for the sake of what we can give to it. God wants to bless you there. Work was given to Adam in tending the garden before sin entered the picture. So what we know from this then is that work is neither sinful, nor is it the result of sin. Work is not the result of sin. It's not punishment. It's not a curse that we have to endure for, you know, until we're 62. It's not punishment. It's a gift. It's meant for our pleasure. Hard to believe, but work is meant for our pleasure, our satisfaction, for God's glory. Now, sin introduced thorns and thistles, so to speak. It makes it hard, but that's okay. God's going to give you a hard job because he wants to refine your character. Not only does he want to work through you in the lives of the people you work with, he also wants to work in you to refine your character. And so you got a hard job. Awesome. You know, never come to me looking for sympathy going, oh, my job is so hard. I'm going to go, awesome. Right? Oh, it's so terrible at my job. It's like, oh, sweet, God's working in your life then? Good, he's chipping off some of them rough edges, teaching you patience where you have none, you know, causing you to endure when you don't think you can. That's good. So yeah, there's thorns and thistles, but guys, our jobs can bring us satisfaction. Now, Adam lost all of that when he got fired from his job. And so just so you and I know, there is no such thing any longer as the perfect job. Okay? Because the perfect job was before sin entered the picture, and it was in the garden, but God put like angels in front of the garden with these like golden swords that like you're not going to get past them. Okay? So the perfect job is on the other side of that, we can't get to it. So there is no such thing as the perfect job. If you're one of those people that you get a job and then it's not, you know, you don't like it, so then you quit a job and then you go to get another job somewhere else because you think, well, this will be a better job, and then you're constantly trying to upgrade. Hey, what are you trying to upgrade to? Perfection? Like, easy happiness? Impossible. Right? Go ride a unicorn. Okay? You're never gonna. And God's going, there is no perfect job, but satisfaction in your labor is still possible with a shift of perspective. So let me ask you, are you finding satisfaction in your work? Has God taught you to see it for what it is, as an opportunity to serve others? Or are you still using your job with a self-centered perspective? What is it doing for me? Am I happy there? Is it serving me well? Is it a worshipful experience for you? Working. You're like, yeah, I sing praise songs all the time, and the guy in the cubicle next to me can't stand it, but I just sing even louder. It's like, that's not what we're talking about at all. So don't be that weird Christian that thinks you're glorifying God by like bringing Jesus into the workplace. Like, I'm going to pray for people. I'm going to pray over stuff, and I'm going to get weird. Like, if that's what you got out of this message, you missed the whole point. I mean, some people, we talk a lot about evangelism in the workplace. Like, some Christians think they need to go there and save their coworkers. And so every morning, you know, they buddy up to the next guy. I've been praying for you, man. I've been praying for you. And your coworker's like, what about? You know, like, I didn't ask for prayer. And you're weirding everybody out. That's not what God's asking you to do. And we talk so much about evangelism in the workplace, like, you know, go and get your coworkers, guys. Go and save them all. And God's emphasis in these two verses isn't on the coworkers at all. It's on your relationship with your boss. And I think if you go into the work environment with your greatest desire being to be a good worker and to honor God by serving your boss well, then what's going to end up happening is that your coworkers are going to see that. That's probably the best witness you've got. And then they're going to see that you've got your life together and that you seem to have joy in the workplace. And eventually they're going to start coming to you. How do you do this? Why are you so happy at work when we're so miserable? I think you can set the tone in your workplace by serving your boss well. I think that you can serve your boss well by when your coworkers come to you privately and want to throw your boss under the bus and speak ill will of everybody in that place. you don't let them. You say, you know what, I don't want to hear it. If you have a problem with the boss, you need to go talk to the boss. Don't entertain that foolishness. Take a stand. Lose some credibility with your coworkers in order to honor the guy you work for, the guy who feeds you. Your primary responsibility, the reason God put you where he did, is for your boss. You work well for him. They might call you a suck-up. They might call you, nasty things like, oh, you're just a butt kisser and all the rest. So what? There's no reason why we need to be so sensitive to the ridicule of a few peons that we then dishonor God in order to avoid that ridicule. Let them tease you. Yeah, I bring coffee to my boss every morning. You should too. You ever thought of being nice? It's not that hard. It's called serving. God calls us here to honor our boss. Let me ask you this. Are you doing that? Are you allowing your job to be time intensive and with the time you've got investing in serving them, making their life better, or is it still self-centered? Is your job a consistent source of joy for you? Are you finding satisfaction? Is God able to work in and through you in that occupation? If not, what a shame. That's why he put you there. You're like, no, he didn't. I got to get out of my job. No, you don't got to get out of your job. Not unless it's like a deliberately working against God type of job. Like you're selling drugs. Yeah, you should probably get out of that one. You know what I mean? Well, God has a purpose for your work. And your job is to find out what that purpose is. That's your job. You're not a factory worker. You're not a carpenter. You're not a doctor. None of those things. You're a Christian carpenter, computer tech, doctor. You're a Christian chaplain. You're a Christian housewife. You're a Christian student. Christ comes first. God has a purpose for your work. Your job is to find out what that is. And in doing so, you'll finally find that you've got the perfect job. You'll find that God has given you the perfect job for you.